Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Is it time to downsize, upgrade your property? Should you consider a reverse mortgage? Justin Klein, along with Chevy Akison, who heads an award-winning realty team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone on May 12th. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin and then write Real Estate Review. By the way, if you requested a review before or submitted an online question to Steve or Justin and received an error message, please try again. A temporary failure in our mail server may have prevented your message from getting through back then. We apologize and we look forward to hearing from you. End of commercial. Now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 3rd edition of Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with me. In this super low interest rate environment, everyone is looking for alternative ways to generate income, and we've been talking about that for a long time. Fixed income assets continue to remain at record low interest rate levels. Go look at the CD rate, your savings rate, and bond rates. You know, they're low. But this doesn't necessarily mean you should not buy them or avoid this whole asset class. It still makes sense for many individuals to buy them. And remember, they offer predictable fixed income payments. And they are lower risk. As an asset class, they are lower risk. Bonds are lower risk. So let me be clear. I'm not recommending buying a bond fund or buying bond funds or buying bond ETFs. But we would encourage you to purchase bonds directly. Now, I believe the best way to mitigate the risk of purchasing bonds in a potentially risky interest rate environment is to ladder them. In order to ladder a portfolio of bonds, remember, you purchase a variety of maturing dates, 6 months, a year, year and a half, 2 years, 2.5, 3 years, buying bonds, every one of those kind of maturity dates. So that's called laddering. And then when the first one comes due, you roll it out 6 months past the last one that's coming due, way out there. This way, if interest rates start to rise, you're getting higher and higher yields. Okay, that's what laddering is all about. Now, I'm not suggesting you buy bonds versus buying stocks. That's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you that bonds are much less risky, and there's a way to buy them in this very low interest rate environment, which has the potential. If interest rates rise, your bond funds, your bond ETFs are going to go down in value. And your bonds that you actually hold, if you really bought the bonds and held them in your portfolio, rates rise, they also go down in value, but they will return to par value at maturity date. You got to learn bonds. You got to learn what all these terms I'm throwing out there mean. But, you know, it is a way to mitigate the risk of the stock market and get some return and not have and be safe about it. Fairly safe. Never say safe. Look at the Puerto Rican bonds. Yeah, you can never say safe. Yeah, I mean, you could say U.S. Treasuries, they're very safe. But you see how low they pay? High-quality corporate bonds are very safe if you look at them historically. But make sure you buy big blue-chip type company bonds that you know will stick around to pay their bonds. Anyways, today on Invest Talk, we're going to also talk about social investing. Not my biggest or my favorite thing to do, but it's not a bad thing, but I want to talk about it. Maybe take it from a different angle. We can think of it as a way to stabilize your portfolio, maybe help stabilize it. So I want to explore that idea. And this was put forth by a financial writer from the Christian Science Monitor. So we're going to talk about that. It's going to be our main talking point. I want to talk about the go away in May. I got some interesting statistics out of Barron's this week. About going into away in May, and you know, the first 3 months of the year and the last 3 months of the year are historically the best periods of the year to invest over time. So that leaves the middle two quarters the worst. So what happens in those middle two quarters when we have a year that started off the way we have, which is down 1%-ish, for the first 3 months of the year. So what happens in the next two quarters? Very interesting stats I'm going to share with you. What would happen if China lands hard economically? What would happen? Is it going to be a worldwide slump? Is everything going to fall apart? What do you think? And why would that happen? Why would they land hard? What would be the reasons that they could land hard? We're going to talk about that. And can U.S. treasuries go higher, meaning the rates they pay go lower? I mean, they're really, really low. Can they go lower? How would that be? How could they? What would drive them lower? Very interesting stuff today. So what do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? Be happy to discuss anything that you want to talk about. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. The market was down 140 for the Dow today, 54 for the NASDAQ, down 18 for the S&P. So I pretty much gave all back that it made yesterday. Yeah. So it's still, if you take a look at any chart, you'll see that it is weakening. And it has been weakening for 2-3 weeks now. The market is weakening after recuperating most, if not all, depending on the index, some done, some more, but some done. Not as much, recouping all of the losses for the January, early February. Market recouped all those losses, and now, last couple of weeks, is starting to roll over again. And earnings season that we're in, that's kind of ending, is not helping much. Not helping much. So it's hurting. And we just got to talk about it, everybody. So you can call any topic on your mind. We'll talk about it as long as it's financial. The number is 888-99-CHART. So let's get back to that number. Let's get back to the line, 888-992-4278.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Ray from Brea calling. On selling a mutual fund, would you use the 200-day moving average? And I know if the manager moves on, then you should consider moving out too. But would you utilize the 200 moving average if the manager stays on? Be listening for the answer on the Internet. Thank you.
Well, the 200-day moving average is considered a one-year moving average of the price movement of the stock. So it smooths out the price movement very slow, you know, over a long period of time, and is considered a long-term trigger to get out of the market or get back in the market. So, yeah, the answer would be yes if that's the trigger you want to use to get out of the market. I wish it could be yes all the time. But, you know, it depends on what's going on in the environment, the economic environment you're in, what time of the year it happens. And there's other factors I would consider besides just that it broke the 200-day moving average. But to answer the question, don't you just hate when people don't answer the question? They tell you all these other things, but they don't answer the question. The answer to the question is yes. You can use it as a get-out point, a long-term get-out point if the mutual fund broke below, the price of the mutual fund broke below the 200-day moving average of the price of the mutual fund. I hope that's very clear. The answer is yes, you can. You're listening to InvestTalk. I invite you to join our InvestTalk Insiders. It's a way to have access to all kinds of stuff, all kinds of good stuff, hopefully. Lists, recorded webinars, all, you know, info sheets, all kinds of stuff. Surviving, prospering in a volatile market was our last webinar. You can sign up for free on investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab. If you have a question and want to share your investing experience, why not do it right now? 888-99-CHART. Please feel welcome to call.
Hey guys, this is Dave from Pennsylvania. I had a question regarding gold and when to take profit. I have two positions in gold. One is Barrick, ABX, and then the other one is a mutual fund, GOLDX. Interested in when to take profit from these. I trying to walk the fine line between being greedy and not necessarily fear, but between greed and fear. But anyway, I was up 25% or 28% on the ABX. I was taking a hit today. It's around noon, down 4%. I'm just wondering, how will I know when to take this profit? When will it go down enough that I'll be comfortable taking profit, and also comfortable knowing that if it goes up again tomorrow, it'll still be fine. But thanks again. Bye.
Okay, ABX, Barrick Gold Corporation, Canadian company engaged in the production of gold and copper in Canada, U.S., Peru, Chile, and six other countries. It's a $21 billion company. We bought this company some time ago, and then It doubled in price on us, and we sold half. We cut it back. And that was about a month ago. And if you're looking at the chart, you can see we sold it. It kept going up. We sold it early. But I don't worry. I don't whine about it. We took half our profits after it doubled. ABX. Now, when do you sell it? I'm looking at gold myself as not a long-term investment, but more as a trade based on what I feel and what we feel, Justin and I feel about the economy and commodities in general, and gold in particular as a safe haven. Okay, so what you can do is use a trigger to get yourself out, and that trigger could be a short-term moving average, like a 20-day moving average. It breaks below the 20-day moving average, you can get out, or below the 50-day moving average, you get out. For instance, the 50-day moving average is $14.87. Today it's at $18.38, so that's kind of far away. So I might use a 20-day moving average, which will give you a closer out. You know, and what would that be? Well, let's take a quick look. A 20-day moving average would be $16.38. Remember, it's $18.38 now. So you can do that. Now, mind you, that same 20-day moving average, break of that 20-day moving average, would have got you out a month and a half ago, and you would have been out too early. So when I'm going to hold on to most of my gold until I feel more comfortable with the global economy and the stock market itself, then I'll get out of it. But I don't feel comfortable right now. So that's not really a trigger that I'm using. It's more of observation of what's going on in the economy, the world economy, and commodity prices, and gold prices in particular, and how much fear is out there, you know, in the investing sphere. The more fear out there, probably the higher the gold will be. And at the same time, I'm watching the dollar. The dollar gets weak, gold usually goes up, and that's exactly what's happened. Good question. ABX is the symbol. ABX was the symbol of the stock. And we own still ABX, just so everybody knows. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Last week, I wanted to mention this real quick because I got an email from Rick, and he said I should issue a correction on advice on a caller on April 28th. And he inquired about using a Roth IRA conversion to satisfy RMDs. And that does not, I didn't think that's what he asked, but if it wasn't clear, RMD is required minimum distribution. A required minimum distribution means you have to take money out of your IRA, your regular IRA or 401k. You have to, at age 70 half, you have to pay the taxes on that. What's left, you can put into a Roth IRA. Okay, so I want to make sure that was clear. And you need to talk to your accountant about these things, because that's not my specialty, is it? My specialty is investing. So, you know, you really need to talk to your accountant about that. I hope I made that clear. The market went down again, $140 on the Dow. Have you noticed it's been about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks? The market's kind of slowly rolling over. Now, there could be a matter of, you know, I used the term rollover. It could be consolidating too, you know, and it's going sideways, but it's more rolling over than sideways, but not rolling over very steeply. So it's not time yet to get too concerned about the market. You know, it's just not. I mean, what is it, 2% down from its recent high? Two and a half? I don't know. It's not very much. So I don't think it's something that you should panic about, but you know, you've heard me. It's May. We got the presidential election. There's a lot of there's a lot of headwinds out there that I worry about. This is Invest Talk, and I really would like you to share your investing experience with me. You know, what have you done right, wrong? What are you doing now? That'd be interesting. Something interesting to share with everybody else. And, you know, everybody makes mistakes, so don't be afraid to share those too. We just have this 1 hour, so I want you to join in the conversation if you can. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Dan in San Diego. How you doing, Dan?
Pretty good, Steve. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I was wondering what your opinion on FDC might be.
First Data Corporation. It provides
provides
payment service solutions to clients in 118 countries and over 4,000 financial institutions. It's a $10 billion company. What's interesting is it IPO'd in December last year.
Okay.
So it's not been around.
I thought it was longer than that. I thought it was over a year. Okay, I'm a little early on it then.
Hey, hold on, let me make sure. I don't want to make that mistake. Let's see, was that 2015 or 2000? Yeah, it was 2015. Yeah, mm-hmm. December of 2015, or November, somewhere around there. I have to get the exact date if you're interested, but it hasn't been that long. It's fairly new.
Okay.
It's going to make $1.32 a share this year. That's down from $3 in 2015, by the way, when it was a private company.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to bounce up 17% for 2017. In other words, it's going to make more money next year. And it's going to make $1.54, and it's $11 stock. So that tells you it's like an 8 PE or so. Okay?
Yep.
Well, that's pretty reasonable. And it hasn't been a long time to know how reasonable that is because it's not been out long enough. It's growing 2 or 3% every quarter for the last 2 years, even when it was a private company. So it's not a real fast grower. So you really want to buy it cheap, and it's not paying a dividend yet. It hasn't declared one yet. I would probably stay away from it because it's so new. It's so new.
Okay.
It's hard to gauge. Well, what is it really worth? You know, you can say, well, that's a pretty cheap PE, and you would be right. It is. But does it deserve a cheap PE? Over time, I can't really tell you because it hasn't been enough time.
Okay. Well, it also has about $19 billion in debt.
Well,
and a lot of, and it seems like its overhead is really expensive.
You're right about the debt. I just saw that. Yeah, I'm going to say no.
This is one of them disruptive companies, you know, that you talk about occasionally.
Yes,
it's disruptive technology. So yeah. I was, you know, thinking of getting in early. Maybe I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. I think so. Thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate it. That's First Data Corporation, FDC. FDC. Well, let's talk about social investing, okay? Now, I don't want you to get too carried away about what it means. It means different things to different people. But there's an idea out there put out by a financial writer, Lauren Belsey, I guess that's how you say his name. He's saying some areas of sustainable investing in the social arena has indicated that maybe it's less volatile in a down market. Now, not talking about social investing buying, you know, organic potato futures or something. We're not talking about that. And in the financial crisis of 2008, stocks lost about 50% of their value. But if you were looking at sustainable stocks and bonds, they went down less. But sustainable doesn't always mean social investing. Social investing means you're buying things that are good or not detrimental to the environment in any way, or are good for society in some way. Okay, that's what social investing is. Sustainable investing is more like buying stocks that will last for the long haul, like, you know, a Johnson & Johnson. Social investing might be a company like Tesla that doesn't burn any fossil fuels, except that's not quite true. Even though it's an all-electric car, you got to plug it in and you use electricity. And where do you think that electricity comes from? But it is at least not burning gasoline. Therefore, you could consider that a socially responsible stock. Okay, so is it something that you should participate in? For me, my job is to get my clients the best returns as possible, so I don't really participate in it. I don't avoid it, But I, you know, if it comes out that this is a socially a stock that is really good and it's happened to be environmentally friendly or socially acceptable, then yeah, I'll buy it. I don't have a problem with it. But I think you'll find that if you go too much in one direction on this idea, you'll underperform the market. You don't want to be married to this idea exclusively. And of course, you can avoid those stocks that, you know, are really repugnant to you. You know, maybe you don't like gun manufacturers or, you know, or companies that, you know, have some kind of pollutant out there, oil companies. You don't like oil companies because you feel they pollute the air. Well, okay, but maybe you need to have some energy stocks and not just, well, I'll buy windmills that don't make money. That's not how you should invest. You know, so you got to really be reasonable in your investments. That's all. I'm not telling you to avoid it, but don't necessarily exclusively embrace it either. We're glad you're here with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and we're here to help you come to grips with the very challenging questions that come up every day in your financial life. So if you have a question about real estate or anything, well, Justin is a licensed broker, or anything you want to do financially, give me a call. 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and you have a standing invitation to join our Invest Talk Insiders. When you're an insider, you have instant access to all kinds of great information, quick to read one-page reports on annuities, life insurance, and many other topics. You can replay our list of webinars, too. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. We continue now with this Tuesday, May 3rd, Invest Talk. Check in now with your question. 888-99-CHART. The line is always open. Invest Talk is produced live 4 to 5 Pacific Time. Call and join in on the conversation. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Let's take a call. Let's take Glenn in San Mateo. How are you doing, Glenn? Glenn, are you there? Glenn. Okay, if Glenn's not there, let's go to Ruby in Cupertino.
Hi, Steve. Can you hear me?
Yes. How you doing?
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Doing fine. I wanted to get your view on Gilead. It's gone down a lot off late.
Okay. Yeah, Gilead is... It's always been, everybody likes Gilead because they see how cheap it is. You know, it's a really inexpensive stock compared to its earnings. It's going to make $12.40 next year, make $12.13 this year, made $12.61 last year, and it's a 7 PE. So everybody kind of likes it because of that. Well, why would the stock go down? Well, of course, probably went down recently because of earnings. But one of the biggest problems is they don't have a lot. They've had issues. They have a lot of bad publicity out there, okay? And, you know, for very expensive drugs. And everybody's worried that government's going to come in and, you know, push them to lower the prices of the drugs. Therefore, they're not as cheap as they look. But on a chart, and on a price basis, it's very inexpensive. I mean, it does have a debt, but it's not insurmountable debt. It has lots of cash flow to pay for it. Return on equity is very, very high. And the P.E. ratio range is 6 to 37, and here is at 7. So you got to think, well, this seems fairly reasonable. Rabi, if it holds in the low 80s, holds that price for a week or two, maybe 3 weeks sideways, and then starts up again, that's when you should buy it. Because I think it's cheap enough.
Actually, I have.
Okay.
Actually, I bought some around 97, so okay. I'm just wondering whether I should expect a bounce back and hold on.
Yeah, I think you should hold on unless it breaks below 82. Let's call it 82. If it breaks below that down to 80 somewhere, I think you should give up because I don't know where it's going to go. But that looks like there's going to be really strong support of that number. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Robbie. Okay. Appreciate it. Gilead, G-I-L-D. It develops therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases. And it's a big company, $118 billion company, so it's not small. Let's talk to Glenn in San Mateo. How are you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing good, Steve. I'm glad I listen to your show all the time. It's very informative. Thank you. I got a question for you on LCI. Well, actually, you just finished Gilead. You recommend that as a buy or hold?
If you own it now, I would hold it unless it breaks below 82. If you want to buy it, you need to wait a few weeks to see if it turns around. You want to buy it when it starts to move up. Okay?
How about if you've got it already and you're in there for, say, the long haul? Do you think it's okay to keep?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So my question is on another pharmaceutical company, LCI. They just had earnings, and I am pretty loaded on it. I was a little bit afraid until I heard earnings come out, but I wanted to get your opinion on it for the short and long of it.
Okay, LCI is Lannett Company. It's very different than, of course, Gilead. It's much, much smaller. It's $671 million in size versus over $100 billion for Gilead. So it's very different. It's a small cap company, almost a micro cap, but not quite that small. Micro cap is under 500 million. This is 671. It's going to make 317 this year and 315 next year after making $4.09 a share last year. So it's come down 22% in its earnings. Sales, however, have picked up 41% increase in the last quarter. Sales have always been increasing. So that's a good thing. And insiders are buying it right now. Okay, so they're buying. They're buyers. It's a P.E. ratio, an $18 stock. It's 5. What's the 5-year range to the P.E. ratio? 5 to 265. So if you wanted to be a buyer of this stock, it looks like it's held support very well at $17.50. It's now 18.32. I think on the next move up, you buy it. Yeah, I think I'd wait till it starts to move up, maybe go back up to $19, then I'd buy it. If you own it, you don't want to sell it unless it breaks below $17.50, because then you don't know where it's going. But I would not. I would be more tend to be want to be a buyer of it, Glenn, not a seller. Okay?
It's hard to
say long term on a company like Lannett because it's too small. It's too small. It develops generic versions of drugs that treat thyroid deficiency, migraines, epilepsy, glaucoma, and other conditions. So it's not a big enough stock to say, oh, you can hold this for the long term. Don't worry about it. You can't say that about this stock. You buy this stock because of the growth that it has. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks,
Beautiful.
Glenn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Will in San Diego. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. I have a question regarding Valero, which I've had for a long time.
Okay.
And it seems like every time it gets into the 70s, it pulls back. So my question is, the next time it reaches the 70s, should I just dump it?
If you are not a long-term holder, yes. But if you're a long-term holder, no, because it pays a 4.2% dividend. Okay? It's now 57.63, and depending on where you bought it, to me, if you can buy it in the low 50s, you buy it in the low 50s, you write it up the 70s, you sell it because it's in a range right now. But if you buy it at low 50s, you can hold on to it because of the dividend. So, and of course, it's Valero, everybody, engaged in refining, marketing, fuels, and other petroleum products in the United States. So oil prices mean something to this company. But, Will, I got a feeling that you don't want to be a long-term holder anymore, that you kind
of... I've seen it go to the 70s and then pull back. I've owned it for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it go to the 70s and then pull back. Now, the fundamentals look good on this company. And, I consult with other professionals, and they say it's going to go a lot higher, but I haven't seen that yet.
I'm thinking if it goes back, It's a very low P.E. ratio, but the range, five-year range, is 4 to 12, and right now it's at 8. So it's not super low, but it's always traded at a low P.E. ratio. I think too many people, too many pundits are in love with it. If it was me, it went back to 70, I'd be out. I'm sorry. I'd be out if it went back to 70.
I think so, too. I think if I'm lucky enough for it to get back to 70, I'm going to dump it.
Yeah, I think that's probably a wise thing. 70 is such a hard – it's going to be almost virtually impossible to get above 72 because there's so much what we call overhead resistance. Every time it goes there, people sell it off, Will.
Yeah. I should have been one of them.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Will. I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, you know how we have that old saying, go away in May? That's an old Wall Street saying. And I've told you that the reason being is the first quarter and the last quarter of the year are the best quarters, and the middle quarters are the worst quarters. So what about this year? There was an article in Barron's that I'm referring to, and they had a study from 1928 to 2015, and they looked at the performance for the first 3 months of the year, January, February, March. And then they looked at the next two quarters, the worst quarters of the year historically, what were the performance based on looking back at that first quarter. And they came to some conclusions, which was kind of interesting. And I'm going to share the stats. You think I'm giving you some good stuff. Okay. We're going to look back to 1928. Okay, I want to say this so it makes most sense for everybody. Now, we're looking at the stock market, and we're going to look at it from the first 3 months, if it's up more than 2% or down more than 2% or in the range of 2% for the first 3 months, because we were down about 1% for the first 3 months this year. So that's how they looked at this. So if the market is flat within the range 2% plus or minus, if it's flat. In the 16 years from 1928 to 2015 that it was flat, the following two quarters were down 0.21%, down a fraction of a percent. You're saying, well, that's not much. But let's look if the market was up over 2% for the first quarter. What did it do the next quarters after that? If it was up, okay, it was up 56.3% of the time. Okay, so how much up was it up? Okay, let's see, it says 2.99%. If the market was down more than 2%, what did the market do the next 6 months? It was up again, 1.11%. So, what it's saying, I'm telling you, if the market is down for the first quarter more than 2%, the market over history, over this length of time, generally is up. And it's up about 2% for those next two quarters. If the market was down more than 2%, it was still up the next 6 months. But if the market was flat for the first quarter, it was down for the next two quarters. Now, isn't that interesting? Up or down enough means that the market is going to be up for the next two quarters. Flat is not good news. Now, it's not disastrous news. It's not disastrous. So you can hold through it. You don't have to be out. But isn't that interesting? Now, maybe it's silly. Maybe I'm the only one that finds it interesting. But I find that fascinating. I think, that's kind of cool. Is it time to downsize or maybe upgrade your home? Should you consider a reverse mortgage? Justin Klein, along with Chevy Atkinson, who heads an award-winning realtor team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone May 12th. To reserve your time, just click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Review on investtalk.com. Send him an email. Tell him you want a real estate review. May 12th. By the way, if you register a review before or submitted an online question to Justin or myself and did not receive or received an error message, please try again. We had a problem there for a few days. We had some trouble with a mail server. Sorry for the inconvenience. I look forward to hearing from you.
You hear Steve talk about portfolio checkups. You can always see his schedule on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon May 11th and then San Jose May 25th. For podcast listeners and others out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Gary. I had a question for your show on a stock, Qualcomm Corporation. I'd like to know what you think that stock should be trading at and if it's a good buy right now. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
I think it's undervalued. It's a $50.73 stock right now, and I think it should sell close to an average PE of around 15, and it's going to make $4.65 next year. So that's like $65 or so. So that's what I think it's worth. I think it's worth in that range. And I think it's worth that range because that's where it generally does trade, in that range, based on earnings. Earnings are going to go down 12% this year, up 14% next year. And it's coming off a bottom. So I think that's where the value is. It's paying 4.2% dividend. It is now a big blue chip stock, $74 billion stock. These Qualcomms and Microsoft and Intel, these are the old tech, right? The old tech darlings of the 1990s. Now they are the other tech darlings of the 1990s are out of business, right? Tons of them went out of business. These are the survivors. Now they turned into big blue chip stocks, and that's what Qualcomm is, big blue chip stocks. So you don't buy it for the growth because it's not going to have a lot of growth. You buy it for the dividend. You buy it for the steadiness of its earnings. You buy it when you think it's on sale, and that's what you do. So Qualcomm is worth more than $50 as a big blue chip stock. It's worth, in the mid-60s. Will it get up there? Eventually, I think it will. I mean, last year it got up to 75. The year before, up to 81. The year before that, 74. The year before that, up 68. So what makes you think it won't go up there? It should. It depends on how long it's going to take. I wouldn't be surprised by the end of the year it's approaching mid-60s somewhere. Wouldn't surprise me at all. You might have a big dip in between when the market corrects, but maybe it's already had its correction. I hope you can hold for after the break. I do have to take a break. I'm sorry I didn't get to you real quick there, but RS in San Diego wants to talk about Warren Buffett? Be happy to. Listen to us on InvestTalk.com. You're listening to InvestTalk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. We still have time for your question. We'll get to it before the hour's up. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Arias in San Diego. How are you doing, Arias?
Pretty good. And yourself, Steve?
I'm doing good. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
I happened to see Warren Buffett's live stream over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, I didn't know. It was my first time. I knew his investment
philosophy
program is very successful. I just didn't know he had that big of a following out there in the audience.
I think
it was something like 20,000 people out there.
Yeah, you have to reserve a spot a year in advance.
Yes.
And these are all, and you have to be a shareholder. You can't, just not anybody can walk in. You have to be a shareholder.
Yes, and one of the gentlemen that during the question-answering period said he'd been Warren when it was $8,000 a share. So he had a pretty nice smile on his face. Now it's over 200 and some thousand.
Yep.
But what really struck me was that Berkshire Hathaway does not pay a dividend. I was surprised about that.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in it. He gets dividends, by the way, because remember, he owns companies that pay dividends. Coca-Cola.
Yes.
You know, one of his largest colleagues. So he gets them. He just does not pay them because he thinks he can reinvest that money and make more money on the money than paying out in the dividend to you. That's
his statement. And he explained that.
That's probably what he said. I didn't see it, but I know his thinking.
Yeah, and I just want to get your thoughts on that because it struck me. I was surprised when someone had, you know, the question during the time, you know, he was taking all these questions, and the person was asking, why don't you pay a dividend? Because that person that asked that question said, because you buy companies that pay dividends.
Well, again, his philosophy is grow the money, and you can't argue with it. Marius, he's grown it like nobody else has ever grown it. So you can't say, well, you're still not growing it, so pay us a dividend. You can't say that. He has grown it. So it's hard to argue with the man who's successful, right? You just can't. And that's why he won't. Now, my biggest issue is he still hasn't, you know, really there's no one he's grooming that we know of that's waiting in the wings to take his spot. So when he dies, I mean, he's getting pretty old.
Yes.
Who do we have faith enough? I mean, it's like Steve Jobs and Apple. You know, ever since everything's happened, everybody has this worry about Apple, even though Apple's doing pretty good and still make a lot of money. But that worry is there. You know, he should. I really think he should address that myself. But
well, you know, his partner is already 97 years old.
I know. So he can't use his partner to take over if something happens to him.
Well, you know, Warren wants to make it to 100. He said that over the week. He said, But you're right. But he always says, Steve, that if something were to happen to him and he didn't wake up tomorrow, the company would continue just like he was there.
That last part, the company will continue, but just like he was there, I have a problem with that. Thanks for
Steve.
The call, Iris. Appreciate it. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, B-Day? BJ.
I'm good, Steve.
Good. Go.
Okay. What's your opinion about GBX?
Okay. GBX, Greenbrier Corporation, supplies transportation equipment and services to the railroad and related industries. I like it. I like it because it's a very solid company. Pay 2.9%. And I happen to like the 4 PE ratio. But the E part, earnings are going to go down. This is an issue. If less oil prices continue to rise or at least keep rising, it's going to put pressure on this company because of where they are. They're supplying equipment and services to the railroad industry. So the railroad industry does well when oil prices are high and trucking stuff is expensive. So, but they're still growing their sales. Sales are still growing. They have hardly any debt. They have they pay 2.9% dividend, and that's a very low payout ratio, meaning they can raise the dividends whenever they want. So I like the company. I think this is a fairly cheap company at this point, the 4 PE. It should be worth more
so
like
$35,
$40.
The recent drop is because of the oil price
I think that everybody's thinking the oil prices are going to start moving down. I think they think they're top for the time being. That's why it's moving down. Time to go. Thank you, BJ. Appreciate it. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note, and I will get back to you. I promise. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, we all want to thank you for listening today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.